Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, we'll go in a very interesting direction today on Theology Thursday, which normally we kind of are doing, you know, Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, we're coming out of that soil, but we're going to look at what's going on in our country right now from a few different perspectives. I have a very good friend who's a graduate here of Southeastern who got his PhD here. Dr. Leonard Gonaga, who is a good friend of mine. We first met. Do you remember how we first met, Leonard? Do you remember?
I think it was in a political course.
Yes, we were in an ethics class. And the one thing that I noticed about you is immediately, I don't know if you had your ultra cool mustache at the time.
No. Maybe.
Like if for those of you on Facebook Live, face the camera a little bit, Leonard, so they can see. You see that wood handlebar mustache bow tie, which you had. Did you have that custom made? You had a bunch of them made, right?
Like my dad makes them. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. So, but that very first day in our ethics class together, you came in with a tray on which you were dispensing Cuban coffee.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And I'm like, I love this brother.
Yeah.
And then I always joke about this, but I'm serious too. I think Leonard's probably the smartest person I've ever known and has been a huge blessing in my life and has been a blessing to this ministry and the radio show. Has helped me a lot behind the scenes. I've learned a lot from him. And so Leonard and his family moved down to Miami recently. He got his PhD, like I said, here at Southeastern. And you wrote something the other day on Facebook that I shared in my different places, my different pages on Facebook that was enormously thought-provoking and helpful for me as you kind of overlaid the original concepts of the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness on top of the chaos and the situation that we're dealing with here in America ever since the killing of George Floyd. And so that started for you with like this endless parade of videos. So kind of take us into what you're experiencing and then we'll unpack
so,
this.
So I have an unhealthy addiction with watching protest live streams that started with the Occupy Wall Street because I kind of wanted to see from their perspective, the individuals that are rioting, you know, what's happening, right? And I also enjoy seeing like the protests. So I took over the weekend and I watched probably 40 hours of these events. And what you see when you watch them is utter chaos because what you'll see a lot on your Facebook page is certain people who have certain presuppositions, certain types of ideologies, you know, share certain types of videos. They're saying, you know, the violence is being done by the police officers or the violence is being done by Antifa. But when you watch 40 hours, it's utter chaos. You will see videos of police officers arresting the media and shooting them and using too much force and violence. And you will see videos of individuals driving ATVs and cars through police lines, ganging up on them, beating them up. You will see Antifa people breaking windows. You will see other individuals, locals breaking windows. You will literally see everything.
And white locals and black locals.
Literally everything.
And you'll see cops forcing a car, forcing an SUV through a crowd, and it's literally everything.
It's
like
everything.
Total chaos.
Yeah, you can't put any rhyme or reason, and the tendency of individuals is try to impose some interpretive grid, you know, because that's our natural tendency is to have order.
Yeah.
But it's literally just this mad descent of chaos. I'll just give you this a couple of examples. Besides, like, the burning of the church, you have tweets from nuns who own bookstores about how their places was ravaged. You had downtown Raleigh, a liberal newspaper publication, and how they got broken into. You know, you have the top trade union up in D.C. Their place got ravaged. And then you even will see these videos as you watch them live. This one really stuck out with me of firefighters, right, who are not here at the center of this discussion about firefighter brutality. And they are rushing to try to take out fires. And in this one case, it was a girl that was in a building that individuals were inhabiting. And the rioters had lit it on fire. And the police and the firemen are trying to get to it, get to it.
Yep.
And they are blocking the streets and making blockades. They're literally throwing bricks through windows, cursing them out, and they barely were able to get the child out alive. So you just see all of this madness coming from every conceivable type of town and context, and it's just absolute disorder.
Yeah, I was reading this. I'm looking at an article that I was reading earlier from. It's on Fox News, and violent armed looters overrun Santa Monica Music Center. They took everything from us and no one stopped them. And this was mostly talking to a gal, Hispanic, and she and her husband own a music instruments. And I guess this is a place started in 1972 by Cuban-Spanish brothers. This rented out musical instruments and low cost to local schools, all this stuff. And she just says it just becomes mass pandemonium. It started at 4 p.m. broad daylight this past Sunday. And there were all kinds of people. She's like, we saw windows being smashed. I saw a woman with snakeskin pants with her face pressed up against the glass of our store. And then she called a group over. I saw them trying to get in. I just started screaming and honking the horn. There's a guy there with an AR-15 trying to protect his place. She said, we wrote minority owned across the front of the store. But soon it started with groups of five, then groups of 10, most with backpacks on skateboards and machetes and hammers in their hands starting to come towards the center. And they destroyed the place.
Yeah, one of the patterns that I saw throughout the video is usually what happened is during the day, you would have all these peaceful protesters out, and you know, it's very fundamental to democracy and to our republic to protest.
I mean,
we were literally founded upon protest. The founding fathers had protested for their liberties, but I mean, you had one auto dealership where they stole 50 vehicles.
Yeah.
And I remember towards the end, because you watch it as it decayed, usually during the day at the beginning, peaceful protest. At night, you would see both types of people, whites, blacks, Hispanics, but specifically you would catch Antifa. Usually these Antifa people would skateboard.
All black, blacked out, yeah, had their face masks on.
All black, black bloc, usually working in teams of three. One would be the arson, one would be the person breaking the glass, one would be the medic, and they would just systematically go on throughout the night and break stuff. But towards the end is when it just got to looting chaos. Like, I saw this video a couple days ago from Philly, and the streets were absolutely jam-packed. You have police vehicles on fire. But people, you don't see any signs. I saw one sign. What it was is basically every single person had book bags and luggages, and they are just going into each place and just looting.
Yeah.
So it's just utter chaos. It's literally a depiction of what the political philosophers discuss as the state of nature.
Yeah.
You know,
which is the exact opposite of what it means to be made in the image of God and what God calls us to and what God establishes, which is order.
Yeah.
And so that's why we were talking about this before the show. We'll hit a break here in a second. And we're going to unpack because what Leonard wrote on Facebook, and I'll share it again on Facebook Live for everybody, is really an overlay of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness on what we're seeing here. And how do you kind of take all that in? Because you may think this is just about George Floyd and racism or police brutality, but there's a lot more here going on than just that. And for us as followers of Jesus Christ with hopefully active, healthy, biblical worldviews, it points to a whole lot more, the nature of man, and ultimately the solution that is only brought by the gospel itself. This is Steve Noble talking to my buddy Leonard Gonaga. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday, as it is every week. But this time we've got my good friend in here, Dr. Leonard Gonaga, who got his PhD here at Southeastern not that long ago and now lives in Miami with his family, back to his roots, also the president of the Bard Company. So a lot of things that have happened with the show and Facebook and our branding and how we reach out to people. Leonard's been involved with that from for a few years now, but actually, and it's been a huge blessing, and we're good friends, and just wanted to tap into that. But recently, after watching like 30 or 40 hours of these videos from all different sources, right, left, Antifa people, individuals, putting all this stuff up there, Leonard wrote, most people would call it a lengthy post on Facebook. I thought it was just necessary because he kind of overlaid life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness on top of all this. Somebody that's got a lot of political theology in his brain, and a lot of research in that, so he's an expert when it comes to these things. And also as a follower of Jesus Christ, so the gospel's in there, so we don't have – listen, you're not going to get any of these kind of conversations from the secular media. I don't care if it's Fox News or CNN. It ain't going to happen anywhere, and it doesn't happen. Ben Shapiro's not doing it from this direction. Steven Crowder's not doing it from this direction. Glenn Beck, maybe a little bit, but he's a Mormon, so he's got some problems there. You just don't have a lot of really solid biblical worldview conversations dealing with the news of the day. That's what we're trying to do here. But anyway, Leonard, when you got into this, why did you choose the Declaration of Independence and life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness to kind of unpack this?
Well, I think because those three concepts are kind of at the core of our democratic republic. And what we're seeing here, you know, the injustice that's occurring is that we can see violating those three principles. right? And to kind of understand this stuff as a political theologian, you know, I want to go and see what does the Bible have to say about things like law and order and society and the state of man, because those are things that you kind of presuppose into understanding this. And there are particular things when, you know, you're looking at this narrative in the Bible that make police brutality particularly abhorrent, right? So we have very strong pro-life principles because we're made in the image of God, right? The Imago Dei. Right, and that is one reason why this is exceptionally abhorrent, is because, you know, a family, an individual, a community was robbed of a life. But in the Bible, there's this narrative. There's these two words in Hebrew, Hamas and Yetzer, and they're used all throughout the Old Testament. So remember when in Judges, in the end, you know, that language about how human beings were acting, or in the Old Testament, you have these verses like, you know, they did whatever was right in their own eye.
And they were nothing but evil continually all the time.
Or even Cain and Abel and that unjust death. What you see in the beginning is these two terms, and what they mean is they mean downward descent and violence, violent intent and downward descent. So think about Romans 1. When Romans 1's talking about violence,
yep,
and the descent, it's kind of depicting it as like spiraling
downward. Spiraling down, yep.
Yeah, and there's also these images in the Old Testament as it relates to this, you know, violent intent that man is combating, where when man sins, he becomes something less than human. So these principles are led basically to what this Jewish theologian Eleazar had argued for the establishment of government in the Old Testament, right? The city, right? And there's a particular government, Israel, but it also establishes the principles. So God, in his grace, gives us this institution of the government to check us, our worst nature, in this downward descent and in this depravity, because it leads to violence and disorder and chaos. And disorder is the antithesis of God.
Yeah. Yeah, and you wrote this, humanity was driven by a wicked imagination and a depraved impulse. So you just lay that single little statement over what's going on in the news, right? And you just go, okay, I see that. It should be clear as day to you. And this wicked imagination humanity actualized as an explosive state of affairs where every intention, Yetzer, which is what you were saying, of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually, which is Genesis 6:5. And you went on to write, and this was fascinating because I was thinking over the last 10 days, this is probably a lot what hell looks like.
Yep.
And you wrote that. I've often wondered what hell would look like beyond the classical depictions of fire and brimstone, and the imagery of anarchy is one that I think of. And that's so accurate, I think, that what we're seeing on the streets right now is just anarchy. It's basically hell on earth,
yeah,
which is the reverse of who God is.
Yeah. So, you know, when people, like when C.S. Lewis would talk about God, right, and he would talk about darkness and evil as kind of like the antithesis of God, he would use it to say like the absence of light, right? And in the political realm, the absence of order, chaos, is something that's antithetical to God's nature. God is, you know, a God of order. So he provides this institution to kind of bring about a temporal peace. That's one of the big theses of Augustine, you know, in the City of God, is that he gives us this this political institution whose primary power is to prevent chaos and disorder.
Right.
And that's something that is profoundly profound in political theology. We see this, you know, leading up. Think about Romans 13. When Romans 13 talks about authority, authority is something that's God-given, and it's given to the state. It's a very unique power that has the sword, right, to basically protect the good against the wrongdoer. So when you look at this principle of downward descent and disorder and chaos, it first gives you an anthropological insight about man's nature and how he has this pattern to downward descent, right, with the absence of order. And then with that anthropology, you can now begin to kind of examine these types of issues about life, liberty, and happiness, and particularly why police brutality in particular,
right,
is so abhorrent. Because why is...
And police as an agent of the state, who part of bearing the sword.
Yeah, so and this is why. So one of the things that makes murder so abhorrent is because it is a violation of the image of God. It's literally praying and destroying the image of God. Well, with the policing powers have an image of God's authority. They are equipped with the sword. And remember, in Revelation, God returns with the sword. We're promised a state of perfect justice when Jesus returns, and he gives us this institution to maintain some type of stability. But when someone with the policing power, the power of the sword that's given to them in Romans 13, literally, you know, ordained by God, this institution, to kind of represent that image of authority. When they violate it,
right,
they are violating the authority of God. You know?
Which is why using the word abhorrent,
yes,
or it's an abomination, is accurate in its strength.
Yeah, it robs not only man of innocent life, but the moment the policing power uses that force for brutality,
right,
when they use the force not to bring about wrath on the wrongdoer, but to bring about wrath on the good doer, it's antithetical to the entire reason why they have that power in Romans 13. So it's additionally abhorrent.
Yeah, you wrote this, and this is beautifully stated. For the believing brethren, the Christians, us, hopefully, that is why police brutality should grab you and grieve you heavily. It is a brutality against the sanctity of life government exists to defend, and a crime against God's very authority and ordained good. And oftentimes, I think, Leonard, and we'll hit a break here pretty quick, we sit there and go, okay, well, what are the circumstances? Okay, that's legitimate, but you should go ahead and be grieved up front whenever you see an abuse of power, in this particular case, an abuse of governmental power manifested in a police officer against somebody that is innocent until proven guilty, because they're essentially kind of executing judgment right then and there, as well as vengeance, which is the Lord's. And then that's why I think we have to grieve effectively.
Yep.
We should be offended and grieve effectively, and then we'll start dissecting the circumstances and all that. But as soon as you see it, you should grieve. That should be your first response.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to keep talking about that life, and then we'll move into liberty and then the pursuit of happiness. How do we look at our founding principles in this country and apply that to what we see, this chaos, this brokenness, this sin all around us, perpetrated by a vast array of different people. Antifa, young people, white people, black people, rich people, poor people, Republicans, Democrats, you got it all going on. It's chaos. It's literally hell on earth trying to understand that. We'll be right back.
So if you're happy in your stuff, and if 10%'s enough, stay away from Jesus.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday, with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today with my buddy, Dr. Leonard Goenaga, who is a graduate here at the seminary, got his PhD. What was your PhD in?
It was an appraising covenant as an alternative to contract.
That was your thesis. That was your dissertation.
Yeah.
What was your actual PhD in?
Oh, Christian ethics.
That's what I thought. Okay. So, and Leonard and I have taken classes together. He's been very, very helpful in building up the brand of the radio show and helping on Facebook and social media. But did a great post. I'll put it on Facebook Live here in a second the other day, kind of looking at life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness from a founding philosophical document, which was the Declaration of Independence, and then applying it to what we're seeing today in our nation on the heels of the George Floyd killing and everything else going on. So we were kind of unpacking life and then giving it. But one of the things at the end of that you mentioned, and then we'll get into liberty, is Tony Tampa, which I had never seen that video. That was a white man suffocated to death by police brutality. He too screamed he could not breathe, that they were going to kill him. Like others, he tried adhering to instructions by police officers, only in the chaos to have his life brutalized and extinguished while his abusers cracked jokes. And then I watched the video, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, there was occasionally there was some concern. Hey, Tony, are you with us, buddy? Because he wasn't responding. And then other times they're joking and cracking jokes. And I'm looking at that going, this doesn't mean all cops are bad. What it means is all cops, like the rest of us, have a sin nature. I can't remember the Puritan writer that said it. Said the seed of every sin exists in every human heart.
Yeah, and one of the foundational things that the Founding Fathers did is they shared this this anthropology of man. That's why the different branches in our government check one another.
Yeah.
This was a heavy influence that came to them from the pulpit, from the Reformed tradition. So they built a governmental model that wasn't trying to bring about utopia, but was trying to check the worst of man's tendencies.
Right, restrain it at least a little.
Because they saw what happened when force was used against them in an abusive manner. That's our Constitution. But when it comes to police brutality, there's an exercise you can engage in. Just go watch the videos. And now, of course, everything needs to be taken in its context.
Yeah.
But you will find videos like the one of Floyd, like Tampa, right? And you will see on display clear examples of police brutality. Little girls thrown, people punched in the face. You'll see them before they enter an elevator beat some men. And they are not the judge. They are the policing entity, the protectors of the peace, so that someone who can have justice will go before a judge.
Right.
They have force, you know, and like Martin Luther said, the sword is not something to be tickled with. They are equipped, the ultimate power of the sword to be used in the protection of peace. But the judge himself in our political system is to be brought to. But you go and you watch the videos and you will see this is an issue. And you would not accept this if I remember a comedian said, you would not accept to have airline pilots where you'd have a couple bad pilots.
Right, exactly.
Right. And now we're talking about an institution that has the literal power of the sword and carries, unlike an airline pilot, carries this image of God's authority. So for the believer, that's where we have to stop, and we have to take it very seriously. Because not only is there this loss of life, but there is this idolatry when man takes it upon himself to say that he is, you know, a judge and jury.
Such a powerful point. So we were talking about life first, and now liberty, which you opened up with this. Sometimes the response by some people to the cry of injustice by black brethren of stuff like Black Lives Matter is all lives matter, which is tricky.
Yeah, it is tricky because here's the reality. Of course all lives matter.
Right.
I mean, you can talk and you know, to individuals who are trying to, you know, bring light to some of these injustices, and they're going to agree with you. I mean, of course all lives matter. But in the parable of the lost sheep, there's a reason why, you know, there was the pursuit of the lost sheep. It wasn't because the other sheep that were there weren't equal in dignity and value. It's just that that's where the issue was in that lost sheep. So it's almost sometimes when I see that comment used sometimes, it almost comes across as very corny because that's the foundation of the gospel is that all lives matter, right? But Jesus goes and he pursues the least of these, not because the other lives don't matter, but because, you know, this is where the injustice is occurring. So it causes you to stop, right, and say, well, what is happening? And in the spirit of being a good neighbor, you need to be able to address these issues. As believers, you know, coming in the image of Christ, we want, you know, to attack disorder and injustice wherever it is.
Yeah.
And just like with the police brutality where you can watch these videos, you could do the same thing, another exercise when it comes to race, to see, to ascertain if there's an issue. So go and talk to any of your black brethren, right, and ask them if they've ever had issues where they have felt unfairly, you know, judged. So, like, you know, when I talk to them, my experience of jogging through Coral Gables down in Miami, upper rich white class, is, in a very real sense, different from theirs.
Sure.
And you will find case after case.
You can jog footloose and fancy free.
Yeah, and this is what you're going to find. And I encourage you to do this activity. Ask them. You know, your Christian brethren, pastors, youth pastors, you know, Bible study members, and what you're going to see is a consistent pattern across the board where their experience shopping and being shadowed, having their experience being pulled over, and their experience, you know, with the police is different from ours. Race is a very nuanced and tricky thing.
Yeah, and I think you put this in your post that listening has remarkable value in this context. And that's why yesterday when I did Black Callers Only, and I'll do another one probably next week, forcing my white brethren, anybody else that's not black, to listen. Don't interrupt. Just listen and learn, because it is a different experience. I saw somebody else the other day, and I think this is really helpful. And if you ask me, and I ask you this question, you ask any white person this question, if you had a choice to be born white or black in America, which would you choose?
And every
white person, if they're honest, would have to say white.
Yeah.
And there's some meaning behind that.
Yeah, and also you have to understand, it's a very nuanced and tricky thing. So because a lot of times one of the reasons why people, and I understand completely why someone says all lives matter, there is a significant sentiment, and this is why dialogue needs to happen, of when you're told you have white privilege, that it somehow undermines your accomplishments. I'm a, you know, white male Hispanic, but I was born on the outskirts of Compton. My parents fled communism. They came here with nothing but $14 in their pocket. My father was an alcoholic till he was 30. We grew up poor. We didn't have anything. There are, in a very real sense, ways that I did not have privileges that other people didn't have. But, you know, it's not just race. So the problem when it comes to All Lives Matter is when someone is saying that your white privilege somehow undermines that. But when you're talking to a mature individual and they're not trying to impose, you know, your white privilege to explain away all those other things, what they're trying to do is there are different types of privileges. Having a father growing up is the biggest type of privilege.
Yeah, absolutely.
It gives you something to go ahead more than anything else. But when they're appealing to this issue of race and the privileges, there is very much a privilege that comes from this, from the color of your skin, and you see it in things like this. But again, you don't have to hear me say it.
Right.
Listening it doesn't take much to listen, but it's very hard.
Yeah, very hard. Well, a young African-American who used to be here on staff at Southeastern asked me to come out to Ohio Baptist, brought out the youngest, I think she's the youngest African-American judge in North Carolina history. She came out, and then we watched the movie about the 14th Amendment, 13th Amendment. I hate getting older. Anyway, somebody came up, asked me that I believe in white privilege, and then Malik said, well, let me give you a different definition of white privilege that might be easier for white people to hear, is that of all the challenges that you've faced in your life, because sometimes you hear white privilege and I'm going, hold on. Now, I would never step up to the plate and say I've had major challenges in my life, because I don't think I have. But he said, a young African-American said, of all the challenges you've faced, one that you have not faced is the color of your skin.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, that makes perfect sense
yes,
to me.
Yes,
and that was good. So let's move on just for the sake of time, because I think that you wrote a large portion of this, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness.
Yeah.
So how do we, because the happiness kind of runs over all this stuff, the writing, the looting. So let's kind of go there.
Yeah, that kind of brings us back to where everything started, right? Which was watching all this chaos going on. Well, and you know, Jefferson got the term life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness from John Locke. He was found foundational to the kind of political philosophical background of our Constitution and Jefferson's thinking. Jefferson probably was influenced by him more than anybody else. But when Locke would write it, he would say life, liberty, and property, because at the core of our independence was the ownership of the self, life. Right, the ownership of one's actions, liberty, and then the ownership of what one acquires through both of those, property.
Property.
Right, ownership, because those are things that equate to livelihood. So, you know, part of the problem, and this is this dissonance, this chaos, and having these discussions that people emphasize one or the other, is when somebody goes and you know, belittles your abhorrence with seeing black-owned businesses, white-owned businesses, Roman Catholic nun bookstores, news publications being vandalized, right? Because at the end of the day, whenever something violates life, liberty, or property, it's an injustice.
Yeah.
So when it comes to that and we're looking at rioting, what we're seeing there is an attack on livelihood. And it's serious. If anybody's ever owned a business, like my business, the amount of time that I have put into that business.
Oh, my goodness.
Right? The amount of sweat and tears. Like this one case, I think it was from Atlanta, of a sneaker store. This black-owned business who came and was an immigrant, he had the entire thing robbed.
Yeah, oh yeah, heartbreaking. So we'll go back to that when we come back. I posted a video the other day of an African-American woman in Minneapolis who works part-time at a store and is also a part owner of the store. It's about a 60-second clip, and she addresses this very, very well, and she doesn't have a PhD. So that's pretty good. We'll hear that when we come back. Welcome back to Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, thestevenobleshow.com. You can go there. You can join us on Facebook Live on my on the Facebook page, The Steve Noble Show there. Also, the podcast is available. So like yesterday when we did Black Callers Only, that podcast is out. All the podcasts for the last several years are available wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple, Android, online, whatever, all over the place there, as well as the new podcast, which I know is slightly offensive if you just hear the title and don't go take the time to read or to listen. But that's called Who Is This SOB? Is it Super Outspoken Baptist? Is it Shortness of Breath? Or is it the other one? You decide that. But go check that out, whoisthissob.com. That's also available. It's a brand new podcast that I want you to listen to because it's an exercise in Christian worldview intersecting a non-biblical, mostly liberal worldview in some of the most popular podcasts in America, which are being downloaded by the millions and listened to by people that aren't ever going to listen to Christian media. They're not coming to church. They're not coming to you. They're not coming to me. So we have to go to them. That's the whole point of that podcast. And I know it makes some people uncomfortable. I get that. I appreciate that. I understand that. I just disagree. I become all things to all men that by God's grace I might win some. And so if I want to get their attention, I can't do it as the really nice, soft-spoken, don't get edgy evangelical. That just doesn't work. Okay. So, but go check it out if you have time. I wish you would and be a part of that. And trying to reach the people that aren't coming to us, we got to go to them. But I wanted to play this. We're here talking to Dr. Leonard Gonaga today, who's a good friend of mine, a PhD here from Southeastern. I want to play this real quick because we're talking about with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This was an African-American woman in Minneapolis the next morning after the worst night of looting and violence there. She works at this little grocery store. She's a part owner of the little grocery store. Okay, so listen to her as she talks about this descent into chaos and what it's cost her. Okay, check this out.
Numbers mean you says Black Lives Matter. I work here part time. Plus, I'm a part owner of this store. You said Black Lives Matter. Why don't you choke me? I'm black.
Tell him, sister.
Look what you did to my store.
Tell him, sister.
No. Look what you did to my store.
Tell him, sister. That's right, because I got they back. These are my dudes right here. Good men.
Look at the things you've done.
Good men.
Look.
The Black Lives Matter.
We've been here all night cleaning up. All night cleaning.
And you got black people standing right here with them.
Black
people.
Tell me.
That's right.
Black Lives Matter.
Exactly.
You lied. You wanted to loot the store. You needed money. Get a job like I do. Stop stealing. This is the neighborhood. We trying to build it up, and you tearing it down.
Yeah, just brutal and heartbreaking.
And case after case after case that you'll see of every type of person relaying the same message. You see, you don't have to pick one or the other as
right.
being the injustice.
Right.
And again, we have this default presupposition to try to impose order, and we have our biases. That's why we have to have discussions, is because otherwise we'll be trapped in our interpretive bias. But you don't have to pick one or the other. They're both injustices because they both violate these principles of justice. You know, when you think of the word justice, the easiest way to envision it when justice is served, it's like imagine having to call a police officer because someone is going to rob you, or call a police officer because somebody is going to threaten your life, right? When they stop that aggression, justice is served. And part of the issue here with police brutality and what happened to Floyd is that it wasn't wrongdoing that was stopped, but it was someone's life that was taken by the person that's supposed to be upholding and preventing injustices. But you don't have to pick one or the other.
Right.
Right? You know, some people say, like, they excuse it and they try to give an apologetic for it, you know, but they're both injustices.
Right.
And let's have a conversation about injustice, right? And both of them are, and it doesn't contribute. More injustice does not you know, solve the issue of injustice.
Right, exactly. And that was the point yesterday. And again, this is where you got to be shrewd as a viper and gentle as a dove. But yesterday, as we did Black Callers Only, and the African-Americans that called in, They kind of were doing it's both and. They were like, okay, that was murder from the cops, and they should all face justice. Protesting is good and necessary. Looting is bad. Violence is bad, and it's bad by all the different players. And just because you're mad doesn't give you the right to go to try to correct injustice with more injustice. They dealt with it holistically.
Yeah.
And I think that's incumbent upon us as Christians to I fight like crazy to not just take one side of any particular story, because the Bible speaks in multiple different ways.
Yep.
The condition of the heart, the condition of the society, brokenness, redemption, forgiveness, the fruit of the Spirit, all that stuff's in there. And so it's very rare for people say, you're either for Trump or against him. No, that only works with God. You're either with God or you're against him. But with everything else on the earth, I think we need to have a much broader approach to these things. And that's where our prophetic edge is, and that's where our opportunity is. But far too often, we play by the same rules the world plays by.
Yeah. I mean, it's about loving your neighbor. And in this issue here, we have our neighbor, our black brethren, who are asking to have this conversation with us. Now, that does not mean that certain segments of those groups have political ideologies that are antithetical to your own. Having the conversation doesn't mean that you have to adopt them.
Right.
But it means that you can consider the experience of your neighbor. And that's a loving thing to do, is listen.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't mean you have to adopt those political ideologies, but it puts you in conversation with them. I'll give this example of this Trump rally where you had a Black Lives Matter come and they were going there to protest it. The leader said, why don't you come on stage for 2 minutes and tell us what your message is? So they go on stage, they weren't expecting it, and they had 2 minutes. And the guy talked about how he's proud to be an American, that he doesn't hate cops, right? But that there is an issue here that, based off of their experience, they wanted to have a discussion with. Now, as they began speaking, you had people project, you know, all lives matter or black on black crime.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, he said himself, of course I believe in all lives matter. But what we're talking about here is a specific issue. And as a good neighbor, you should always be able to listen. Out of love for your neighbor, you should be able to pursue them. And any Christian should be the antithesis of sin and disorder and chaos. We should hate it. because we love the dignity of man and we love order, right? And flourishing. Yeah. So what does it take to have this conversation? And if we do find that there's an issue, because this is the agent who holds the sword, and then we can have a discussion on pursuing that. We can have disagreements on, you know, like right now they're having the discussion of defunding the police. You don't have to buy those arguments and those ideologies and those assumptions. But in order to find if there's an issue, since we don't have this perspective, since you don't know what it's like to be a black man, but you do know what it's like to experience injustice, and we have this cognitive faculty to make approximations and understanding it and being able to have that dialogue. And in order for you to understand it, the only way, since you don't experience it, is you have to listen,
to
the experiences of another person.
And that's where that's had such a profound impact on me. And I'll be live tomorrow from Bishop Wooden's office at the Upper Room Church of God in Christ here in Raleigh, was to spend time and to hear him share stories. And I mentioned this, I think, yesterday maybe, when we did one of our annual events called The Worship a few years ago, and he and I did a conversation, kind of an interview on stage, and he told the story, multiple stories. And Bishop Wooden, if you've ever seen him, he's a very well-dressed man. He's incredibly well-spoken. He carries himself well, but he's been in, he told me a story once when he was in Belk in the department store. He went to the bathroom, and he was at the urinal, and this old man and his grandson walks in, and the grandson's like, you know, 5 or 6, and he looks at Bishop Wooden, and then he looks at his grandfather and points at Bishop Wooden and goes, is he a criminal?
Wow.
As he goes, how do I relate to that?
Yeah.
I better listen to it, though. And then that night, Wooden said, well, not that long ago, I was pulled over, and the first question the police officer asked me, because that maybe probably because I'm driving a really nice car, is this your car?
Yep.
And I said, all right, hold on just a second. All right, all my white friends here in the audience, there might have been 300 white people there that night. I said, let me ask you a question. How many of you, when being pulled over by a police officer, have ever been asked, is this your car? And one hand went up.
Yep.
I said, okay. And then I mentioned this yesterday. How many of you, if I say to you, you need to give your son or your daughter the talk, what do you think that is? Well, that's the birds and the bees, right?
Yeah.
Well, for most of the African Americans I know, the talk with their son and their daughter is how to handle it when you have an interaction with police or you get pulled over. And I just go, okay, we better listen.
Yep.
We better listen.
Yep, and that's kind of where it starts, is listening. And you know, you're going to find different perspectives. I saw this one college campus. They had a multicultural center. You know, this black female came up and said, there's too many white people in here. I need to ask the white people to leave. That is a negative view. I mean, so you'll find some perspectives where it's like that. But what you're going to find when you talk to mature brethren is that they have this shared experience, and you need to listen to it because you don't have it. And if you don't have an experience, the only way you can come to understand it is through dialogue.
Yeah.
And what does it take for you as a neighbor to pursue it in love of your neighbor to hear them out? And what we learned today with the policing power, with the image that they carry of the sword, it's something that should demand the brethren's attention even more, because just like we are with pro-life when it comes to, you know, the sanctity of life and the image of God,
incensed by it,
we should care about when God's image in the form of authority in this temporal institution that he has put here in place to defend us and protect us and prevent us from experiencing the true ramifications of our depravity, you know, we should be enormously serious about that and listen to it even more deeper, right? At the end of the day, the solution to this, justice, is going to come with Revelation 13, when Christ comes back and pulls the sword. I mean, perfection, the utopia, will come with him. We cannot have political policies that will bring the utopia here, but what our system is founded upon is checks and balances against man's depravity. And when it comes here to things like police brutality, that's something that should very much demand the attention of the brethren, because we have that anthropology.
Well, that's like when you see a husband who's the head of his household, abuses his wife and his children. If you see a pastor who's supposed to shepherd the flock abusing the flock, or in this case, when you see a cop, be them white, black, or whatever, male, female, or whatever, directly representing God's authority on earth through the government as an officer of the government, and they abuse that, that should be just as offensive to us as anything else that abuses the image of God, and especially those that are supposed to represent God's order on the planet. I think that's a really helpful way to look at it, and then to remember we need to be willing to listen and think biblically and theologically before you ever think politically.
Absolutely. Go listen to your neighbors and go love them.
Amen. Leonard Goenaga, the doc in the house. It's great seeing you, buddy. Thanks
good
for coming
here
today. It's great having you. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon, and like my dad always used to say, ever forward.